This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online.
It feels like on this podcast we're thanking people who see others struggling and do their best to lift them. Teachers, therapists, youth workers, you name it.
But there's one person we don't really thank enough. Ourselves.
It's sometimes hard to remind ourselves that we're trying our best to make sense of everything when everything seems crazy in this world around us. It's not always easy.
So take this as your reminder to thank the people in your life, including yourself, for getting through the craziness.
Therapy can help you find the things you're grateful for in your life.
And to learn more positive coping skills for when things do go pear-shaped.
With over 5,000 therapists on offer, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health.
Let the gratitude flow with BetterHelp.
Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/bollocks.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/bollocks.
Go Loud. Talking Bollocks with FBT Gyms. Unleash your fitness potential with no contract and full class access. FBTGyms.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in the door. Tell your body you're dead. Walk it hard and slow. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Episode 197 of the Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud and proudly sponsored by FBT Gyms, the gym that goes above and beyond. If your current gym just isn't cutting it and you're ready for a change, FBT Gyms have got you covered. With locations in Swords, Coolock, Drogheda and now Talla, they offer a supportive, motivating environment to help you smash your fitness goals. Whether you're a total beginner or a seasoned pro, FBT has the resources, expertise and encouragement to keep you on track. Plus, every membership comes with a free induction to help you hit the ground running. It's time to unleash your potential at FBT Gyms. Just €44 per month, no contract and full access to classes. Sign up today at fbtgyms.ie and start your fitness journey today. It's me, CLB.
It's me, Terry Flower.
And today we're joined by...
Claire Walsh.
Claire, I need to just get this in straight away.
Oh,
you are my dream guest.
Okay, why?
Because I am fixated on freediving since the deepest breath.
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple of issues that we have here.
Go for it.
I have ADHD, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a big ego. So, I thought freediving was easy.
Right, how did that work out for you?
Not great. So the boys actually stung me.
We have a good video for you. A good video, yeah.
Yeah, the boys stung me at a live show, and because like we've this ongoing thing on the bonus episodes where it went, how long did that go on for? Weeks, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, a good long time. It was November last year, and this conversation came up because I'd seen The Deepest Breath, and Terrence has an awful tendency, if you recommend something to him, he just won't do it. So like you'd say, watch this film, and he'd be like, yeah, and he won't. Or watch this series, yeah, and he won't. So that was going on for weeks on end, and then he finally watched The Deepest Breath. But he was like, I'm not watching that and all. That's easy. I can hold my breath. Because the record, what did we look up? We were like, if you can do it for like 3 minutes, we were like, do you know how hard that is? And he was like, I can do it for 3 minutes, no problem. Live on the podcast, mm-hmm. on the podcast, he did it. And he got like 39, 40 seconds, right? And he was like, I'll do it. I can do it in front of people. Like, if you give me time, I could do it in front of people.
I'm better underwater, remember?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that's what he was like. If I was underwater, it'd be different because he was sitting in the studio literally like this, just hand over his mouth and nose. So we had a live show then in the February and we stung him. So on the stage, we were like...
Now, I had the flu, Claire.
Little disclaimers. Yeah. Go on, yeah. Flu, poor thing.
So... we were like, remember Terrence said he could hold his breath and he's different underwater. And we got this big, huge, massive bucket on the stage. And we're like, off you go, Terry. And we put a timer on the screen in front of 2,000 people. And I think he actually got like 16 seconds or something like that.
Could have been less.
16 seconds, come on.
It could have been less. Now, the problem I have is, Claire, I'm at the pulling you the second I seen you there. And I was like, isn't it harder? Like if you're in a suit and you're bending over into the button, you went, no, it's easier actually. And you're at the break of my heart.
Now, the only thing is, if you're stressed or if you're nervous or you've to perform, that's going to raise your heart rate.
Thank you.
That's going to make your thoughts go quick.
Yeah, thanks.
Go quickly. So there's going to be a lot of things pulling your oxygen.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, it is harder in that setting.
Yeah.
But technically in water, it should be a little bit easier. But I guarantee you, if I spent a couple of minutes, I get you to the 2 minutes, no bother to you.
Can we do it on the podcast? Can you get me the 2 minutes on this podcast by the end of the podcast?
can I? We can give it a go.
If I listen to the information that you're going to give on how you got to, I don't want to put any spoilers in very early, but 6 minutes, am I right?
5:59.
We'll round her off to six.
Yeah. Oh, no, we can't, because when I get that six, that will be a celebration. That will be a celebration. Yeah. Look, when you're holding your, like, obviously everyone focuses on that number, and it's really funny because to me, freediving is about so much more. But you come back home or, you know, you're chatting about freediving, the very first question that you're asked is, how long can you hold your breath? But that's, I won't say that's the easy part, but that's probably the
simplest part.
Yeah, thank you. That's the simplest part. And when you're training to hold your breath, the most important part is the breathing you do beforehand. So, you know, you have to breathe a certain type of way, and then it goes into the mental side of things. So even if I did my relaxing breathing and, you know, I had good posture and I was working on releasing all the tension in my body, if my mind is going, right, so I need to perform really well because the two lads are watching me and how many people listen to this and all, Jesus, that, you know, if my brain started to do that, it's going to totally negate anything that my nice, calm breathing is doing. So it kind of works against it. So you need to get the physical side of things, which is the calm, relaxed breathing. We also need to match it with the mental quietness. So if you create an atmosphere that's really, really relaxed for your body and then go into a breath hold for that, or, you know, with that, that's going to be totally different than on stage. How many eyes looking at you going, and holding every bit of, every muscle in your body twitching. That's going to be so, so different. But if you can get that relaxation down, no bother to you.
Delighted with that, because I was getting a bit of stick over that on that stage I was, and after the show.
Rightly so, though.
Yeah. You want to hear the talk out of me, Claire? Honestly. I was going to break the world record easy.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Going into water for 10 seconds and died to death.
Do you remember I did it then? I got closer to the minute mark. Remember, people thought I was dead and all.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On the stage, people
I was on the stage a bit worried because I lasted 15. I was like, he'll last 40. And then he was still in the water. And I was like, is he all right? Yeah.
Because I remember when I...
this could go so wrong.
He did it. And then someone says, like, oh, yeah, calm down. And I was like, no. And then everyone was like, go on. I was like, all right then. And I dived into it. And then everyone cheered. And then the cheer, like, subsided. And then the cheer went up again. I was like, I must be in here a long time.
And then
like,
I went back down again. Then I started trying to talk to the crowd and I just went, how are you? I was like, you're having a good night. You're still in the water.
How'd you get in here?
Yeah, people are like, is he dead? I'm not giving people the thumbs up and all. But Claire, we have singers. And a singer is like a would you rather, neither or. Mm-hmm. You say things this way, do you say it that way? And we have one kind of tailor-made for you.
Right.
You do a lot of public speaking.
I do a bit, yeah.
How do you find it?
I really like it. I really enjoy it, actually. It's a challenge, but I think I've been doing it long enough, or I've been doing performing, some level of performing for quite a while now, that I really enjoy it. I look forward to it.
So it's one of the biggest fears in the world, that, isn't it?
Glossophobia.
Is that what it's called?
So it's called glossophobia. I actually started my own podcast called Scared Shitless, and it's to look at how fear plays a role in your life. So we get people on, we chat about fear, and sometimes they have phobias, sometimes they have something different and how it holds them back or how it pushes them forward. But what I've learned is fear of public speaking is higher than fear of death.
It's higher.
Higher.
And what's the highest then?
Fear of public speaking.
It is, that is
number
it?
One. Oh, so it's called glossophobia.
God. It says seriously, 40% of people.
It is shocking.
But like, does anyone ever pull you after a show? Like when we do a live show and we meet friends and family back, they go, oh, I don't know how you do that. Yeah. You can see the drain in their face. Yeah. How the fuck do you get up on that stage? And I get it as well. Because getting onto a stage, like, or getting up and talking in front of people is
horrifying. Do you ever even have to order a takeaway? And people are like, yeah, you do it.
You practice beforehand. You're like, I'll have one biryani. And okay, go again. Yeah.
Like, people don't want to do it. You have to order for everybody. And you're like, it's not that big. You're speaking to another human being.
But
it's not that big.
I remember, and again, so I was in first year, my very first day of secondary school. So that's going back a little bit. And we were all in the big assembly hall and they were going through the big roll and you had to say Anshul. So here. And I was Walsh at the very end. I literally was practicing the whole time. Going, Anshul. Claire Walsh, Anshul. Oh, shit. You know, I blew it. But it's that panic.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I don't have that so much now. I find what you guys do. So in the podcast, I'm the interviewer. I am shitting it. Absolutely. I find that so much harder. So this is just lovely. An exhale, I guess, to be the guest.
What do you fear when you're the interviewer? Is it how well it's going to go?
Yeah, how well that might, that I'll just like have a brain freeze, not be able to think of something, that I'll get excited and talk too much, that, I don't know, I guess I've done a couple of podcasts and I really know the difference between interviewers that can make you feel relaxed and at ease and then interviews that don't do that. But I don't know if I can break it down into how they do it. I just know the feeling.
Yeah.
I really want to do that for my guests.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard. And I said it to you before, I'm kind of resentful of the two of you. You make it look really fucking easy and it's so not. It really isn't.
Yeah.
It is a skill set.
Mm. So this thing, Claire.
Okay.
So 40%, but it sounds like, I think it actually is higher, but supposedly 40% of people have a fear of public speaking, right? So with that in mind, would you rather go for another national free dive record without training or do an unprepared talk in front of 3,000 people?
Whatever it is. Yeah. I'll talk about it. Butter and toast, I don't care. I'll talk about it in front of whatever number of people then. No. Yeah, no, free diving is, I'm actually sweating at the prospect of it. Free diving is so different. And so I used to work for Lambert Puppet Theatre. I used to be a puppeteer. And before a show, like things were kind of, they were often a little bit rushed. And plus the people I've been working with were doing this for years. So I'd be saying, I just want to rehearse that bit again. They're like, you'd be grand. So I used to get really nervous. But you know, when you're performing, you get a little bit of a, like a rush of energy and you can use it. Free diving is the opposite. You get that rush of energy and you need to calm it down. You can't channel it into performance. Actually, it hinders it. And like I said to you, the minute your thoughts start rushing, the minute your heart rate rises, you're consuming oxygen. So there is something exciting about performing and preparing, but the real challenge for me is to do a competitive free dive. Haven't done it for a long time. The thought now makes me feel scared shitless, which means I probably need to go through it again. But yeah, it's a whole other ball game.
So I'll probably make a lot of listeners who have got a fear of public speaking think, Jesus, public speaking is actually not that bad. Because
really?
you didn't even let me finish a sentence. I'll take option yeah. B, whatever
Absolutely.
It was.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that makes public speaking sound easier or free diving sound horrific. So I'm like caught in the balance.
Well, like, so the thing is with free diving, like if the three of us were mates and we've been training like for a couple of months and I know what you're working on, I know what you're working, well, you're probably nailed everything at this point. You're that good at free diving. Like if we were like, you know, having the crack, I knew what you were working on and we went out on the buoy or buoy. And I had to do a dive, I wouldn't be that nervous. You be my safety, you be cheering me on, and then I'm going to do the same for you. So that's a very different kind of session, dive session. In a competition setting, very, very different. Obviously, you set a target for the depth that you want to hit. You've judges, there are rules, and then there's the variable, the sea. My first dive of the World Championships in 2019, is on YouTube. And spoiler, I black out at the end. But like, if you watch the start of that, you know, I think I'm talking about free diving and I'm describing it's this really calm, zen thing. And in this, I'm holding onto the line. I'm being smacked in the face by waves. There is nothing calm about it. So obviously you have this massive variable, the sea. You can't control what the conditions are going to be like. So just with free diving, I feel there's so much more at play. And unless you get a handle on your mental state, on the ticker tape of thoughts that go through your mind, unless you rein that back in, a lot of stuff can go wrong. And I don't mean in terms of, you know, an injury or like a fatality, but just staying conscious or blacking out.
Mm.
That is literally the difference. Your thoughts, the mental activity in your brain, it can make the difference.
That seems to be I can't think of anything else where energy wouldn't help your performance.
Yeah.
You know, like that, especially even that nervous energy or excitement. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that would hinder your performance
but
the way it
exactly
would there.
But that's exactly it. It's so individual. It's so specific. And I even kind of chatting about it now, I remember holding onto the rope and I'm up and down like a fucking bronco. And I remember thinking I'd give anything to be doing a show with no rehearsal at this point, because that I kind of know how to figure it out. This was just so brand new to me at the time. And it is a mental challenge and a physical challenge, but mainly mental, like nothing I've experienced in my life.
Mm.
It is astounding.
Right, we'll get into it, Claire. I'm so excited to hear your story, because I don't know how on God's green earth you got to where you are today. Do you want to tell us, where are you from and what was life like growing up for you?
I'm from Leixlip in County Kildare. So obviously not by the sea,
yeah.
But so much of my childhood, I remember being by the sea, whether that was on summer holidays at different spots in Ireland. Dad, kind of from an early age, taught me, like, firstly, a respect for the sea, but he taught me how to play in the water. And that's what I remember being a kid, just having the crack, like stupid games, like getting smacked by waves, laughing, rolling on your arse and then getting back up again, water in your face. There was definitely an ease in water from an early age. Dad then took us swimming. We went into swimming lessons and I did that, I guess, it's one of my earliest memories, right up until I was 18. We went swimming a couple of times a week. So kind of the water has always felt like it's been a big part of my life. Once I didn't go traveling until I was a little bit older. So I was in my 30s and I headed off. I went traveling to South America and I had great crack. And I wanted to do scuba diving. That was my thing I wanted to do on that trip. I went scuba diving. It was great. Loved it. Fun. And you get to see the fish and there's turtles and it's cool. And then I remember being somewhere and someone said, I was saying, like, there's a lot of equipment, isn't there? Like, it's quite cumbersome. And someone said, then you should try freediving. I was like, yeah, cool. I don't know what it is. And I'd be a little bit similar if someone says I should try something. I'm just not going to do it. Unless I find it for myself, I probably am going to do it. But, you know, so I'm on this really cool trip. And I don't know if it was weeks or months later, I was in Belize. I was snorkeling. I was with a group of lads from Australia and they just seemed to be good in the water. They just seemed to be good at most things. So off they went. They went down from the surface into a cave and out the other side. Now, I'm a little bit competitive and I tried to do it with them and my ears just screeched the pain. So I came up and really nonchalantly afterwards, you know, with the beer and the handgun, so come here, what was that? So they described freediving and they did this course. I was like, yeah, no, that sounds cool. And then I literally took out my phone, went into Wi-Fi and looked where I could learn it. And I was gone the next day over to Honduras, an island off Honduras called Utila. And I did my first freediving course and I haven't put a tank of air on my back since. No more scuba after that.
Right. Take us back a little bit. So when you were in school, let's say, did you have an idea you were always going to do something that involved being in the water, as in a swim or anything?
I hadn't a clue. I'd done like speech and drama. I loved speech and drama. I loved doing shows. And like after school, I went on to do drama. So I think I wanted to be an actor. Then after my degree, I went to London to do a master's. And after that, things didn't go very well. I was quite ill. I was just knocked on my arse, like with mental illness. And that kind of went on for a couple of years. And it was a real time of, I'd say finding my feet, but it wasn't. I was just trying to keep going. So there was never any aspiration of what I would be. I've definitely changed careers quite a lot, or I don't even know if you call it a career. I changed jobs a lot and seemed to just try and figure out what was in front of me and approach it with a bit of, sure, look, I'll give it a go. But it's very easy to say now, oh, it's brave and I just was giving things a go. I felt really ashamed of it. Like my friends were studying to be social workers, accountants, teachers, whatever they're doing. And I felt like a little bit of a flake. I was always really embarrassed anytime a job asked me for my CV, because my CV said performer-ish, puppeteering, movement direction, a gospel choir musical director. You know, it was pretty eclectic. And then, you know, I'm going, and I also like breathing. You know, I teach breath. So it never felt like there was a through line. So I was always quite self-conscious about that. And freediving, you know, I didn't set out to make a career of it, and I haven't. It is something that I do. But once I found it, I couldn't let it go. I tried to. I came home and was like, well, that's it. You know, just as my tan will fade, I'll forget about freediving. But it just wasn't the case. And I think it was the mental aspect that really, really, really pulled me in. Like, you know, if you experience mental illness or are trying to balance mental health, you know, it's recommended that you do loads of things like go for a walk or take a nice bath, or, you know, there's loads of things that you can do to supplement mental wellness. But when I was mentally ill, and I find that's quite an important differentiation. When I was mentally ill, you know, you're just trying to keep going. So all these things like, oh, you should try yoga, you should do meditation, you should go for a walk, you should do all these things. And I'm going, no, no, no. Firstly, I was too sick to get any of the benefits. So when I was feeling a little bit better and then I found freediving, suddenly, you know, you're in this sport where you can't lie to yourself. You can't pretend and say, yeah, I'm doing really well, because it's just you and your thoughts. So you have to find a way of making peace with your own brain. It's really hard to do.
Mm.
So I think that was probably the first time, maybe outside like counseling or therapy, that I tried to make friends with the different thoughts and feelings that can be really overwhelming. I tried to find a way through it.
Yeah. So what year are we talking here, Claire?
Oh, this is where it gets really messy. 2015 was when I first tried freediving. It's nearly 10 years now, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm. And when I hear you speak about it, I kind of draw comparisons with Formula One driving, because there's no margin for error in that. Yeah. They're so in tune, they're so switched on, they're so reactive, they're so aware of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, they're so aware. But that's chaotic, because it's just like flashing lights. I could nearly describe freediving the same thing, but it's silent.
It's quiet. It's the first line in my book. Let's see if I can get it. Underwater, you don't hear anything. Putting my face in the water is like a sigh of relief for my mind. Racing thoughts and internal chatter fade away, and I am lulled by the sound of the water in my ears. Something like that. And that's what it is. Freediving for me is quietness, and not just from the sound around me, from the sound in here, from the sound that is like usually racing through my brain. And sometimes it's pretty benign. It's just me going, what do I have to do tomorrow? Did I get that done today? The normal kind of internal dialogue. And then sometimes it's some really, really horrible, toxic, I don't know, ways of talking to yourself. So freediving for me is quietness. It's peace.
Yeah, because they say if you're going through something, and not the best way, but one of the ways that you should help get yourself out of that is get something that will occupy your mind.
Yeah.
So a task where you have to concentrate on what's at hand.
Yeah.
You can't half-arse it. It can't be one of those things that you're doing while you're on your phone. You know, one of those things.
Yeah, that's actually nail on the head. And like, essentially what you're describing is a mindful practice, something that you have to be present in. And, you know, I know kind of mindfulness is quite a buzzword at the moment, but like, mindful practice is being immersed, observing, but not attaching judgment. So like if I was to do that to freediving, let's say I went diving tomorrow, you know, it would be to accept where I am now. So I haven't been in the water for a while, and not to attach any stories like, well, then you're shit. Were you ever good at it? You should probably stop. You know, all those things, that's attaching something to it. So, you know, if I was to go diving tomorrow, I'd have to, well, you haven't been in the water for a while. How does it feel today? How does it make you feel? You know, and just, I suppose, open up, and it sounds really cheesy, open up your heart a little bit for any of the good feelings, any of the reactions that it might invoke. There is a sense of, being a little bit at peace with where you're at, or acceptance, or in the moment. There you go, in the moment.
You mentioned earlier on about kind of being a bit ashamed of your CV, but you said something that was on your CV was you teach breath.
Mm.
When did you start doing that, and what actually is that?
It's funny because breath work is now something that's really, really common. A lot of people are talking about it. But for me, breath work has always been something, maybe it wasn't the term breath work, but breathing was always something that was part of my maybe professional vocabulary. Even speech and drama, you know, you're taught how to do intercostal diaphragmatic breathing. And for my exams, I just rabbit it off or just repeat intercostal diaphragmatic breathing is when we, and so on. Don't think I fully understood it, but as a kid, that's what I learned how to, you know, regurgitate. And then it made more sense to me. And then I started singing, and, you know, singing and breath support is such a big factor. So, you know, there's a strong relationship between breath, singing and performing. And then puppeteering, actually, breath is a really big part of it too. You know, the impetus of movement comes from the breath. You know, it can make something seem alive. And then there's this other kind of mad discipline like free diving, where it's all about breathing, or that space in between taking a breath and exhaling. So I kind of came to breath from lots and lots of different angles that definitely informed. I definitely knew, look, there's something to this breathing thing more than breathing in, breathing out just to exist. It could have pretty transformative powers. It could do a lot for our mind. It could do a lot for our voice. And that was something that was, you know, really important to what I was doing. So I used to work with people a lot who were, you know, this thing, just take a deep breath. You know, as a kid or, you know, as a teen, you're told to do this anytime you're stressed or anxious. Just relax. Just would you go over there and take a deep breath? And then when you say that to people, they go, and their shoulders are up around their ears, like, that's not relaxing. So I began to work with people to show them ways of breathing lower into their body to create a better sense of body awareness. And kind of fast forward to now, and we have different modalities of breath work. We always did, you know, pranayama has existed for a long, long time. We definitely didn't invent it, but it's certainly a lot more commonplace. I hear it being spoken about a lot more. So people are far more aware of the power of breath, which is absolutely incredible, whether that's Wim Hof or Oxygen Advantage or whatever discipline you decide to focus in. I think anything that brings your awareness to your breath and what it can do for your body, and most importantly, your mind, it's pretty incredible.
So you've been doing this breath work long before you started freediving.
Yeah.
It's a mad correlation there.
Yeah. And like, I guess I didn't call it breath work at that point. You know, it was like, it was breathing techniques and then freediving was just like a mic drop. Freediving's like, you know that breathing thing? Wait till I tell you. You know, it just totally turned it on its head and showed me a whole other side to it. And that side, like, is really, really, really powerful. Like I said at the beginning of this, you know, if you sat and I showed you how to breathe, we create a nice, calm environment, and you breathe like that for 2 minutes, what you would be able to do in your breath hold as a result is so different than that 15 or 20 seconds in a high pressure, intense situation. So it shows how breath can influence our mind, our body, and what we do after that.
Class. You said you went traveling in your
30s.
Mm-hmm. What was the decision behind going traveling then?
It's probably a boy. It was a boy. It's maybe two boys. I don't know. Do you know what? It was a knee-jerk reaction. And I had many of these throughout the years, certainly from 30s onwards. Stuff wasn't going right for me. I was working on contracts with like either stage schools or different teaching, different whatever jobs teaching, and then I'd be seeing someone-ish and it's going well-ish, but it's still early days. And that December, so it was December 2014, and I got let go from my job and your mom broke up with me. And I just went, oh, news, I'm out of here. And I remember New Year's Eve that year of just going, that's it, I'm gone. I booked a flight that evening and I was gone within 5 weeks. And that set off a series of travels that I did throughout my early 30s. And it was an amazing thing to do. You know, I was traveling on my own, I was traveling as a single woman in some countries that might be perceived as dangerous. But as the years went on, it went from, I think, a positive thing to our kick the can down the road thing.
Yeah.
So anytime I hit something that like I should have, well, I don't like saying should have because it led me to some really incredible opportunities. But when maybe I should have stayed and figured it out, I said, oh, I'm just going to Egypt. I'm just going to go freediving. So freediving became this like sticking two fingers up at Ireland or your man or Tinder or whatever it was or whatever stage school. I'm just going, you know what, I'm doing something for me. And I spent most of my 30s doing that up to like 37 or 38. Trying to, like, the funny thing, I was trying to create stability at home in Ireland. I know I want to be based in Ireland and I also want to go traveling. But to do that, you have to be earning money. You have to have somewhere to go back to because I was in and out of rental places and then landlords are moving back in and then I'm back in with mom and dad. And it just was really messy. And meanwhile, your pals are buying their house and getting engaged and getting pregnant and all the kind of thing. And I felt like a bit of a failure. I felt like I couldn't get my shit together to tick off the checklist of what you're supposed to be doing. And my reaction to that was just to lean into it and just go traveling some more. So I definitely wasn't helping myself. Mm.
So there was no like initial plan.
No plan. I still don't have a plan.
I met with her.
I'm gone and I'll figure it out later. And then when I couldn't figure it out later, I'll just go traveling again. So literally I was coming home working to fund the next trip. And it was terrific and also really lonely at the same time. Mm. And I definitely think it didn't do great things for my confidence. And it led to a sense of, I don't really know where I fit in. I know what I want, but I'm not actively trying because I'm over here doing that. It just was a really weird time in terms of identity or building a future or stability. And then at the exact same time, it was amazing.
Mm.
So like 2019, I was in the World Championships and I had done a bit of competing before, but this one was different. If you go back a year to November 2018, sorry, I got confused. World Championships was 2019. The year before that, shit had hit the fan. Around this time, so we're in November, I was living in a kind of an eclectic house share. Work was kind of patchy. I did have work, but it wouldn't be lasting past January. I had been broken up with by another fella. there's a theme here. And then two big things happened. I burnt my leg quite badly. Which had me, you know, feed up, kind of in and out of hospital. And then my friend died pretty tragically around that time. So I remember about a week after her funeral, I remember sitting on the couch of this house share and like, so my pajamas, and I was surrounded by half drunk cups of tea and coffee and like takeaway pizza boxes and stains in my pajamas. And I remember just looking down and going, oh, no, no, no. Like something has to change. I don't know what it is, but I need something to move me forward. I don't care if that's really slowly. It doesn't have to happen overnight, but I need something. And around that time, I found out or looked up whatever that the Freediving World Championships are going to be the next year. And even just saying that, like, scared me shitless. So I knew, well, then that's exactly what you have to do. So there was more of a plan that time. So I set about getting fit. Obviously, I had to recover from my injury and then, like, get a baseline fitness. And then I needed to get into the water early. So I had to go out in May to Egypt to start training, to get a coach, to get money to get the coach. And so definitely was more of a plan there. And that was probably my last big trip. And it was a knee-jerk reaction, but it probably wasn't as irresponsible one as it had been before. But freediving gave me a formula.
Sounds like you're putting a plan in place this time, whereas before you were like just dipping out.
Yeah, I just like what I knew about freediving, I would need to be physically fit, but I'd also need to be mentally and emotionally fit. So to do that, I'd actually have to take care of myself. So what was more important in that was not the end product. It wasn't me going to the World Championships. Yeah. I wasn't really very good, to be honest with you. Like in terms of, let's say, the people that you have seen in Deepest Breath, I'm nowhere near them. I'm very much at in a different realm. But the achievement of that was me putting myself out there. Because the minute I made that decision, like almost instantaneously, the voice in my head said, who the heck do you think you are? What's X going to think about you? Someone's going to think you've notions. Who do you think you are rocking up to the World Championships with the best of the best in your sport and you think you're part of them? You know, and before, that would have been enough to make me go, oh, yeah, no, sorry, I actually can't do that. But because things had been so shit, because things had felt so, and uncomfortable is a really light word, things were so heavy with both depression and grief at this really awful tragedy, I thought, you know what? It's worth the discomfort at pushing myself forward than the discomfort of staying in this place. That was just, no, that's not a way to live. And that's not how I wanted to live. So just went for it.
How, like, you're going on as if, like, ah, it's only the World Championships. Like, it's still a World Championship.
It's still a World Championships. And it's probably taken me, you know, a few years to appreciate that, because when I was there, I was still really mortified at the depths I was doing compared to the other divers. Like, yeah, I was mortified. I was ashamed. I made fun of myself a lot in that really classic Irish self-deprecation way. And then I kind of leaned into that joke a little bit too hard and it hurt my own feelings. You know, it's this really weird scenario. And it's not until a little bit of reflection that I just went like that, like, I was never going to win the thing, but I could do something really big and really brave for me. And that's enough to be proud of. So, you know, you ask me, how do I feel about public speaking? Yeah, I don't mind it. But what I feel pretty passionate about is looking at fear and how it holds us back and also how it can push us forward to do something that's brave. And my brave looks different to your brave, which looks different to your brave. And also my brave of now looks different to my brave of 10 years ago. I think it's about like looking, what's a challenge for you today? And some days that challenge was get out of bed, put on clothes, brush your teeth. That's a good day, Claire. That's a win. Good for you. And then other days it was, well, hey, represent Ireland in the World Championships. Like those two people are worlds apart. But that doesn't mean that that challenge of getting out of bed, putting your feet on that floor, brushing your teeth and just doing normal day or just even move to the couch. That sometimes felt like just as big a challenge as going to the World Championship. So like that, I feel really passionately about that. And that's why public speaking is maybe that bit easier, because I believe in that message more than what people might think of me.
Yeah. It sounds like you're on more of a self-help journey than a competitive journey.
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm a really competitive person. I really am. But I do recognize I'm competing with me. So yeah. I want to be better.
I bet that you.
For me. It, yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah. I don't think there's any harm in that.
Yeah. And that's exciting. That's going well. Like, I just have to make one brave decision today and who knows where I'll be in a year's time. Like, that's exciting. Just a little more.
I want to just go back a little bit because I'm still very intrigued at how you start. So you wanted to go scuba diving. Where were you?
Utila, so an island off Honduras.
So you wanted to go scuba diving there. Someone suggested free diving. You seen the free diving. You got out of the water then after trying it. And you went to get coaching for it, was it?
So at that point, you know, you're doing your beginner's course and the next one is your advanced. And I had done the beginner's course with three lads. And we finished our second day. So the first day you go to 12 meters, and this is in depth. Then the next day I went to 21, which was the limit for your beginners. And I remember the lads, we got off the boat and we're like, oh, will we sign up? will we sign up? Go on. All right, if you do, I'll do. So the gang of us signed up for the advanced course. And the first section of the advanced course was your breath hold. So this is called a static breath hold. So you are lying still in the water. So when we're talking about that competitive element, I think I went last. And they were all men. And, you know, we're shown the techniques and we talk about mental strategy. And lads went first and he got 250 and he got 320 and he got 350. And I just said, well, I am not going to be the one with the shortest breath hold and a woman. That's just not happening. So I got over 4 minutes. So like, that's where the competitive streak comes in. And then you can go a bit deeper and they teach you ways of how to equalize, which is balancing the pressure, you know, of the water and inside your ears and things like that. And so that was 2015. Oh yeah, I was due to only stay there, I think like a week or maybe 2 weeks. And I had another month left of traveling and I just stayed the whole time and just dived as much as I could. The following year, I went back out. I did the next qualification and then the following year went back out again, stayed longer, wanted to become an instructor. So that was about 2017 and that was a really cool year. I started out in Utilla. I went to the Galapagos Islands, did freediving there. That was so cool. And then 2017 was the first time I went to Egypt in October 2017. And that was it's a pretty special memory. And you've seen the deepest breath. So the scenes at the end take place in the blue hole in Dahab. And that's where I trained. And that's where I then kept going back to. I spent a couple of summers in Egypt then. I met my husband there in 2019. He followed me home and we got
sounds
married.
A bit wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah, he followed me home. We tried to get rid of him. Off. Yeah, no, really. That's my version of ends. And seeing as I'm on the podcast, that's the version we get. Yeah. If he wants to tell the truth, he can do his own. No. But he did. He followed me home. So like the blue hole in Dahab is a really special place to a lot of freedivers. And yeah, it's a pretty special place for me.
You mentioned outside, Calvin, that he said it's like one of the hotspots, Egypt.
Yeah, it's pretty old open freediving, yeah.
Yeah, like for me, it was a lot closer than Utilla, which took like 3 days to get there. Like suddenly I could leave at 4 o'clock on a Friday and I could get there by Saturday morning. It's cheaper, but also you have access to depth from the shore. So you get in the water and, you know, a couple of meters from, you know, the shore, there's a drop and you can hit 93 meters, which is pretty exceptional. I haven't had to use the full 93 just yet, maybe one day. But yeah, it's a really incredible community. It's quite a small community. So we would all know each other. And if we don't know each other, we've met each other, waved at each other in the street, or we know of each other. So yeah, it's a really incredible experience. Last time I was there, it was 2022. I spent 2 months there. I went out to write my book there. I didn't even write my name. I just spent all my time in the water. It was class.
I love it. I don't want to keep taking you back, Claire, but...
Oh, take me wherever.
See, when you mentioned about you spent a month out there then freediving when you first started after the advanced class.
Yeah.
After that month then, you were just coming back home then.
So I'm coming back home. And again, like I said, like I really did try to let it go, but I just couldn't. I kind of was like, there's something about this that I need to know more about. Okay, I can't do the depth, certainly then. So there's now quite a good freediving community and there's people... not me, who have worked really hard at building, you know, freediving in Ireland. So that really didn't exist as much then. So I remember I found a buddy because you can't do it on your own. That's a really important factor. And we'd go to the pool and we'd train techniques and we'd develop our breath hold. So that was probably what I did for about 2 years. And, you know, I'd do things like... I'd go on the bike in the gym wearing a nose clip and I'd hold my breath and do crazy, like the number of times I fell off a bike in the gym because I was holding my breath. You know, you find other ways of training. And then, you know, then the following summer, I try to go out for that bit longer. And then at that point, you know, I'm kind of going, right, how can I do this for more time? And then 2017, I think I was gone for most of the year. and just I wanted more. And it was depth that was the attraction for me. It's depth that still is the attraction for me. It's incredible. I feel like one of, you know, those stupid emojis, the hearts in their eyes. I feel like that's what I look like when I talk about it. But it is just Laura McCann, the director of Deepest Breath, I think she did an incredible job of showing the why we do the sport.
I said that exact thing, Claire. Like, look, I've never done it, obviously, but
it's made you curious about it.
The idea of going right down to where it's like black, to me, was the most exciting thing about it.
Yeah.
I was like, I wanted it. I need to do that at some stage. It just, I don't know what it was. It's the most intriguing thing in the world. That's exactly what got me.
So you get it.
Yeah.
And like the thing is with the sport, like, oh, like any interview I did around my book, like we'd have the conversation and I'd spend back in like 20 minutes explaining how it has a bad reputation, but how it's actually safe and how it's a really calm sport. And then, of course, the headline's going to be second most dangerous sport in the world. Firstly, I don't know why it's second. I don't know what's first, but that's always the headline. You know, Kildare woman in second most dangerous sport in the world. And you're kind of going, we literally had a conversation about this. So it gets a lot of bad press. But like, obviously, there is a really extreme element to it. But like, I liken it to running. So you can have someone doing like 1K run or doing their couch to 5K. Then you can have someone who does a 10K or a marathon or a half marathon. And then you can go on to do an ultra. And then you can do an ultra at night. Then you can do an ultra at night barefoot on the side of a cliff. That is a spectrum. They're all under the title running. Free diving's kind of the same. I'm probably around the casual 10K mark. Mm. And what you see, especially towards the end of the Deepest Breath, is something that's a lot more extreme. It's not as commonplace. And that's not what I think of when I think about free diving. So, you know, it does have this reputation, but, and I think it does a disservice. It's complicated because obviously you don't want people looking at a YouTube video and then heading out to the 40 foot thinking that they can do it, because that's how fatalities happen. You know, you need to be taught by a professional. You need to not dive on your own. Even if you say, I'm only going to 1 or 2 meters, does not matter. Mm. There are far too many variables involved. So it's, you know, learn from a professional and get a buddy. Get a buddy who knows what to do if something happens. So those are two really, really important rules. Never dive alone. And then there's the other side when, you know, I've been explaining to people for years about this sport and how it's really calming and how it's really zen. And then they read the title, second most dangerous sport in the world, or then they see some more extreme footage and they go, that's what you're doing? So it's a really hard place to be, because I think it's both. I think the majority of the time, it's this really beautiful sport that allows you to put your head underwater and see, like, I've swam with hammerhead sharks. Like, I lost my shit with excitement when I saw a hammerhead shark in the blue hole in Dahab. It was class. It was so exciting. And I didn't have a tank on my back. I went up to the air, took a deep breath, took the snorkel out, and then went, like, tried to go after him. Like, that is such a lucky experience. That will sit on my memory shelf for a long time to come. If I'm lucky enough to be an old woman, I will still go, I did that. That is so cool. And freediving lets me do that. And that's what I would love people to take away from it. That yes, there is a dangerous element. There's no getting away from that. But you seem to have it. Like, there's something intriguing about it. I think it can teach you more about yourself than maybe any other sport has for me anyway.
Mm. I think I can nearly see where people are coming from though after watching The Deepest Breath. Because you see the blackouts kind of happening. And like when you see that happening to somebody, you kind of go, oh, fuck.
Yeah. You know? But like I went into the marathon there a couple of weeks ago and you see people finishing, cheering, you know, punching their fist in the air, and then you see people collapsing at the end. Like, you're putting your body through something extreme.
Yeah.
Your body can react differently depending on the amount of training, your mental, you know, so many variables. And I keep on saying that, but it's a really important factor. Look, I'd be fibbing if I sat here and said, ah, come here, it's grand.
Yeah.
It's not extreme at all. Like, that's just not true.
Yeah.
You're holding your breath and you're going underwater.
Yeah.
But if it's done properly, yeah. if it's done safely, the benefits far, you can really minimize the risk, and then the benefits far outweigh the risk involved.
And might sound a bit naive for me to say, but is it not, is a danger not self-imposed danger? Like, you only put yourself in as much danger. That, it's not as if, like, you're going to go and dive 20 meters, say, I'm going to dive 10, but we're both at the same level of risk.
Yeah.
It's how much you're willing to push yourself.
You know what? Thank you, because I should have made that point, because it's a really, really important one. You know, you're responsible for yourself, but also, if you're my safety, I'm responsible for you. Like, and this is where getting a buddy that you trust is really, really important. So like, if the three of us were training together, I know your ability, I know your ability, you know mine. If there's a situation where I'm going to push things a little bit, you two are going to be honest. You're going to be coming up with the plan and we're going to be working on it together. So I'm never going to go, lads, come here. I'm going to go to 70 meters. And then you say to me, but Claire, you've only gone to 50. Yeah, look, I'm going to try. Sure, you can just, you know, manage. That's not how that works at all. We're going to sit down together and go, right, so you want to get to 70. Where are you at now? Right, you're at 50 and you did 50 comfortably. Let's move that up to 54 and let's see how we go. Right, 54 was good. Right, 2 days later, right, we might try 50, whatever way you do it. So actually, like, you're my safety, but I'm going to respect that you're putting yourself out there for me. The trust you have with your buddies is something else. You develop relationships with people. I think that's why we're a pretty tight community, because when you're diving together, when you're like, I'm invested in what you're working on, I'm invested in what you're working on. How'd you sleep? Not great. Okay. You're going to change your plan? No, cool. You know, you're doing it together. And then you go off home to America, you go off to Thailand, and then we don't see each other for 2 years. But there's that little connection because of that shared time, that investment. It's pretty special. And I think that's where, you know, that trust, that responsibility comes into play.
You have the Irish national record in freediving.
I don't know if I have them anymore, to be honest with you.
No.
No, I don't think so. There's been some terrific athletes come up behind me. I haven't dived competitively since 2019. And it's funny because when someone breaks your national record, there's a moment of, oh. But actually, hand on heart, the goal is to build a profile of freediving in Ireland. And that's not going to happen with one person at a pretty shallow, if I'm being dead honest, a pretty shallow record. Like, so then you get excited when you hear someone else has done something else, because we're raising the bar for Irish athletes. And that's what we want to do. We want to build it up. And then who knows, in 10 years, freediving might be so recognized in Ireland that we have funding for it. Can you imagine? You know, now it's even hard to let a pool give you access that'll let you use your fin. So it's really hard to train in Ireland. So the more it's known, the more women that are doing national records, you know, any athletes, the more that they're competing and putting it out there, the more the sport will be visible, will be recognized, will be able to train throughout the year and then go off. You know, training, preparing for competition is expensive because it's always meant you have to go abroad and you have to support yourself. So, you know, it isn't something that you can do every year. I've been lucky. I literally came home, saved, went. But, you know, that's not something that everybody can do. So the more people that do it, bring it on. Bring it on.
So tell us about the World Championships. One, how do you have to qualify for that?
No, I sent an email. I sent an email, and I think with my qualifications and maybe my personal bests, I remember hitting send. And I remember thinking, I really hope they don't let me in, because if they let me in, I have to actually do it. So you hit send and you're going, oh, well, I tried. Then they replied almost instantly, almost immediately going, brilliant, fantastic. And you're going, oh, shit. So no, I didn't. Like, in other countries, there's people have to fight for spots on a team, like France or, you know, wherever. That's not the case. We don't have that many athletes. So I was there very much on my own. And I remember I was with like a gang of the Danish team, actually, and they were given out of their tracksuits that their federation had given them. I was like, you have a federation? You got tracksuits? So yeah, like, I was just there on my own. And I think Gym Plus Coffee made me this incredible hoodie with the Irish flag on the sleeve and Claire Walsh on the back, which was class. But I just felt like cool runnings. I felt like the Jamaican bobsled team, like, what the hell was I doing there? I felt like that the whole way through. It was a wild experience. It really, really was.
And is that when you set the 60 meter depth?
No, that it's funny. I haven't done that depth in competition.
Oh, that's out of competition.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, and it's not 60 meters, it's 59. So my breath hold is 559 and my depth is 559.
Well, you can't stop that because
that just really drives me insane.
Oh, just for me, like
better do that.
Yeah, no, that's good. We'll actually handshake on this afterwards because I will get those sixes.
So obviously we've seen the deepest breath and there's a scene in where they're pushing each other to set the world record.
Yeah, that's Hanako and Alicia.
And it's literally like meter by meter.
Yeah.
Like she's struggling to hit 102. She comes back up at 103. They go 104, 105, 106. Yeah. When, I know you kind of set the plan there, like you wouldn't go from 50 to 70, but like, when do you go like 50 and come back up and go, do you know what? I'll go 51 now and just go back down. What way does, like, what's the thought process there when setting it down? Because you're kind of tethered to a rope, aren't you?
Yeah. So it's funny because I can't put myself in the position of what would have been going through those two athletes' mind, because it is a whole other ball game and they're going for world records. So, you know, when you've done, so it's called like a target dive. So if I've been working on, let's say, so free immersion is the discipline is pulling yourself down on the rope. So if I've been working on free immersion, let's say I've gone to 55 and I've been working on a little while and I come up and I do 55. If that's my target depth for the day, I probably wouldn't do another one because it is a lot for your body. So I would wait. And then if I had a coach or my buddies, we'd have a chat and we'd go through, right, how did you feel? We'd talk about EQ, which is equalizing. Was it easy? Did it feel hard? Did I notice any areas of tension? So basically you're looking for tweaks. And if you come up and the word we would use is clean, so it didn't look like there was any signs of hypoxia, it feels like it more in the tank, sure. 2 days later, we drop the line 3 meters and then I go for the 58. Then you do the same kind of assessment. And then you go, you know what? Like, actually, I felt quite a lot of tension in my chest. I need to look at that. So then we pull the depth right back to a safer or more shallow depth and we'd work on techniques and, you know, we tweak things and then we progress again. So it's always forward, back, back more, forward again. So it is this kind of dance of one step forward, two steps back. But like that's a training cycle. That's like there's a whole science behind that. And it's so much fun.
So see, we were mentioning about deepest breath when it goes down and it gets black under there. When does it start getting really dark under there?
So I think that's something really specific to...
where you are, like.
Yeah, so... what you're referring to is Dean's Blue Hole in the Bahamas. Mm. And like a lot of them, they'll wear torches on their wetsuit. Yeah, I've never had to do that. but that's what Dean's Blue Hole is known for. Like that absolute pitch darkness. I can't imagine that. Like, you know, the biggest depth or the deepest depth I've been to is 59 meters. And I was in Dahab in the Blue Hole. So light definitely changes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. What's it like when you're down there?
It is darker. It's colder. When I say cold, like it's Egyptian water's cold. It's not Irish Sea cold.
Well, you can feel the temperature change as you're going down.
Definitely. Yeah. And what I love, like, so the parts of your body that aren't covered by your wetsuit are your hands, your feet, and I wear a mask, so part of my face. I love the feeling of the water getting colder. Now, I'm unusual in that way. In that I like and I'm comfortable in cold water, but even the water cooling down your face and it's just rushing over your hands and it's just like a liquid hug. It's gorgeous. It's like the most dreamy quality. And at that point, you're probably in what's called free fall. So you're not doing anything to sink. You're not actively propelling yourself down. At that point, negative buoyancy is just bringing you down. You tuck your chin to your chest. Your only job is relax, keep soft, and off you go. It is like the most beautiful dreamlike state. So if you're ever chatting to a diver and you say, how'd the session go today? And they go, oh, it was a great dive. They're probably referring to that point, the free fall. It's just delicious.
You sold it. You sold it. Yeah. Like that is like, I'll definitely never get to that point. Mother of Jazz is something I'd absolutely love to do.
Give it a go.
It's the hot spots in Ireland.
So the thing is with Ireland, so we're never going to get depth like that ever. And also, so think about if you go for a swim in 40 foot, let's say, you know, you're chattering because it's cold. Even in summer, there'll be a point where you're chattering. Chattering uses oxygen, or shivering uses oxygen. Your body is tense. And that's the opposite of what we want for freediving. So if you are going to go to those depths, we need the body to be as relaxed as possible. Like I remember, you know, you're in Egypt during the summer and the water goes up to 31 degrees and we're all still wearing wetsuits. And some of the Egyptian lads are like still going, it's freezing. You're going, are you kidding me? I was roasting. But, you know, you want your body to be as relaxed as possible. So you kind of need warmth. So if I was training for depth, I probably wouldn't do it in Ireland, but that doesn't mean that there's so much, that there isn't so much to see here. There's a terrific school, Emerald Free Diving. They swim out of, they do sessions out of Keem Bay, I think. There's Hanno up in Free Dive Northern Ireland. So yeah, you absolutely can get depth. You're not going to get 20, 30, 40 meters, but in terms of learning the skills, going into that underwater world, yeah, bring it on.
Amazing.
Claire, you and Terrence had an unintentional connection outside when he tried to justify the fact that it's harder to hold your breath because he had a suit on and you were like, no, it's easier.
So you mentioned, would it be harder in water? Is that what you asked me?
Yeah. And I asked, would it be harder because it was bent over?
Well, maybe the bent over part, but the water should have helped. So the water should have helped, and there's a science behind it, is because at the front of your face, we know what's coming next, and the front of your face is where we can stimulate our trigeminal nerve. So when the trigeminal nerve is submerged in water, it sends signals to the body to trigger what's called the mammalian dive reflex. We all have it, and that helps us hold our breath.
Two things.
Go.
I was bent over.
Oh, all right. Two things about this, right? Yeah. Go on.
I was bent over and I was in a suit, so I'm going to use that as my excuse. Yeah.
Sorry, hang on. A normal suit, not a wetsuit.
No.
A wetsuit to put his face on the water for.
So did you think I meant a wetsuit?
That's like wearing armbands to wash your face in the morning.
I thought I
got a wetsuit. Coming out with a pair of flippers and all. Big scuba Steve on his age.
A three-piece suit with a waistcoat on, Claire. Like, and winkle pickers. He wasn't prepared for dive. I was in the National Boxing Stadium.
He was on a stage.
I thought you meant a wetsuit. Yeah, that makes way more sense. All right, I'll give you definitely more credit for that.
Right,
then.
Right. So that's number one out of the way. I can't believe you thought for a wetsuit one.
But like, it was wet. All right, yeah, fair enough.
I suppose, yeah, suit in your line of work is different than anywhere else.
Yeah, and then I forgot, why is he wearing a wetsuit in front of an audience? Like, he really set himself up for this. All right, yeah, a normal suit, sorry.
Imagine if I had went backstage, right? Got a wetsuit on all of me. Come here on the stage, got 15 seconds.
God knows there's nothing more attractive than those wetsuits.
Oh, come here, you leave nothing to the imagination.
Nothing to the imagination.
Yeah. Smuggling grapes.
So that was number one. Number two, you mentioned the trigeminal nerve.
Yeah.
Which is the maddest thing in the world because we've actually spoke about it on the podcast a couple of times. But I have a thing called trigeminal neuralgia, which we nearly made the connection. I thought we were at the finding the joining the dots there. I was like, oh my God.
Turns right around the matter.
The podcast gave me trigeminal neuralgia. But the fact that you mentioned the trigeminal nerve there is mad to me.
Like, I've never heard of trigeminal
neuralgia.
No one else
has either. It's like what percentage? Like a fraction of people have it, isn't it?
Yeah, but I have a thing called idiopathic trigeminal neuralgia, which like 10% of people with trigeminal neuralgia have, and that percentage is small as there is.
Yeah, so you know what my deep dive is going to be tonight when I go home looking into this? This is mad.
Don't even look into it, because you'll be worried sick about me. She'll be ringing me and all. You are right, like, it's really bad, yeah? No, it's worse than you probably think it is.
obviously there's a connection. There has to be, like, it's the trigeminal nerve.
Well, I'm convinced you're at the coming up with a cure, something that I've never tried. Because obviously, when I'm in the height of pain, I'm like, get me tablets, get me to hospital, get me this, get me that.
So what I know about the trigeminal nerve, and this is the part of freediving that I'm really crap at. Maybe not the physiological part, but certainly the science behind it. But what I know about it is, when we put our face in water, it kicks off the MDR, the mammalian dive reflex, and then a series of physiological things happen in the body to help us conserve oxygen and hold our breath. So seals have it, dolphins have it, we have it. We can train it to be stronger. So usually you see it, if you ever see a kid learning how to swim, they dunk the child.
Mm.
And that's teaching them. So, you know, water in the face, teaching them to hold their breath underwater. And it's why loads of people don't like getting their faces wet. You know, I don't mind something, I just don't like getting my face wet. That's really normal, because as soon as water hits your face, you know, your body starts to, like, your body's starting the whole, don't breathe, water, you need to hold your breath. But yet, you know, when if you're in the shower, you still can breathe. So there's that kind of slight stuttering or I suppose mixed signals. Someone's listening to this going, she's making a balls of this. But anyway, but then the opposite happens. If you got it, I don't know why I'm using the baby as the example, but anyway, so if you held a baby and you went in their face sharply, they'd take an intake of breath. So air on their face means breathe, water on the face means stop breathing because you might be submerged.
I know this is a bit extreme and someone might listen to this and even you might be like, no, you fucking dick. Mm-hmm. But is that how waterboarding works? Because you actually can't drown from waterboarding, but it gives you the sensation of drowning.
It must be. It must be the same thing, because literally that's like water flooding your face and it's not the drowning. That must be it.
Someone told me you can't drown from waterboarding, but it gives you the same effect.
Yeah, because your body's starting to do the...
like shut down, kind of like survival mode,
The start that, I don't know, it's not stuttering, but it's that, and it's not choking either, but that, you know, breathe, but don't breathe. You know, to me, that's your body trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. Where am I? Is it a safe environment? No, there's water involved, but yet you can breathe. To me, that's what's happened. To me, that's what that sound is. And then air, it does the opposite. So again, blowing your face, you're going to, is the reflexive movement from it. So that must be it around waterboarding. Okay, second deep dive this evening.
Yeah, so do you want to delete your bleeding internet history? How does waterboard somebody?
Claire, I know, well, I don't know this, but I'm assuming you want to portray a good image for the sport. You want to encourage people to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still want to ask you this.
Go.
Has there ever been a time when you've went on that and it didn't feel right? And you nearly regretted it, or felt guilty, or wondered why you're doing it?
Two times come to mind. The first one, I can't place it, so I don't know what trip it was on. I know I was in Egypt, so I don't know which time. But I remember going underwater, so I'm head first, and the loudest voice in my head was, nope, not today. And the minute that sentence finished, my body had a massive domino effect of, that's it, shut down. And, you know, I'm only like 2 meters underwater at that point. So I just, you know, turned around and came back up. And I remember thinking, I've never had that before. And I suppose in a previous time, I would have slagged myself off. I would have gone, come on, the fuck, off you go, stop messing or whatever. You're just being lazy, whatever. Again, that berating, which isn't self-deprecation at that point. I would have given myself a hard time. But at that point, I just went, this is unusual. This is not like me. So I'm going to respect it. I'm going to get out of the water. Lads, see you afterward. Everyone okay? You're good if I go? Give me a hand. Give me a shout if you want a hand with the equipment. I'm going in. So that was one time. And it was nothing more than that. But I did choose to listen to my body.
Mm.
The other time was the dive, the first dive of the World Championship. It's that first one where on the surface I was supposed to be calm and breathing up, which is the series of breathing that you do before a dive. So I'm supposed to be doing my breathe up, zenning out, and it's like holding onto the line, getting smacked in the face by waves. So I remember I was doing no fins, which is what it says in the tin. You're not wearing any fins, so you're doing like a type of a breaststroke. And it would, I suppose, be widely known as the most challenging discipline. So it's what you see Alicia do towards the end of deepest breath. So it's doing no fins. And I remember, so you do this kind of keyhole stroke. And I remember when my hand came down towards my side, I felt my hand shaking, which is really weird to feel in the water. And I'm like, that's not right. And then I think then you just focus again. And at that point, I was at the bottom, and you know, I took my tag and it popped in my hood, and I went to turn around and start the way up. And I remember seeing my safety divers come in front of me. So I must have been at about 12 meters. I remember looking up to start orientating myself towards the platform. So you come up in front of the judges. So I remember just looking up, and then I don't remember anything else.
You blacked out?
So I actually blacked out on the surface. But at that point, I guess I lost thought. I don't remember it. Mm. But I still kept going, and I came up. I saw the footage of it afterwards. I started to mess up my surface protocol. I'm supposed to take off my mask, signal, and say, I'm okay. And then you go for your tag. So my friends were watching it on the phone with my mom and dad and my family that were over. And they saw me come up and automatically go for my tag. So they knew then something's not right. I wasn't fully there. I wasn't fully present. Mm. So that's when, like, I think my coach was watching with him, and he went, oh, shit. So I should have had a coach in the water. I should have. But I didn't, because I didn't think I deserved one, because I was only doing a shallow dive. And who did I think I was? If I'd had a coach in the water, they would have shouted at me, going, Claire, signal, signal. And instead I would have, oh, yeah, because that's automatic to me. Signal, I'm okay. Mm. Mask, signal, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. It's so it's so instinctive. But I was hypoxic.
Yeah. That doesn't count then, doesn't it? No?
So no, I was disqualified. my next memory was being taken out of the water and a French guy had just given me a rescue breath. So I thought suddenly I'm underwater is the last thing I remember. And now this French lad is trying to kiss me and pull me out of the water at the same time. What's going on? And I just it's so disorientating. And then there's this moment of, oh God, you realize what's happened.
Mm, and I'm crushing them.
Yeah. And actually the first thing that came into my head is I knew there were cameras. So I didn't know what had happened. I didn't know when I blacked out. And also I know how bad a blackout can look. And my parents were watching it. It was the first time they're going to see me diving. So I remember looking for a camera. So in my head, I spotted a camera and went, I'm fine. Don't worry, see you in a second. But in reality, what that looked like was me going as I struggled with the people trying to help me. So it's that moment of what's happening in my head is very different to what it's looking like in reality. And then you're taken out of the water and brought to the medical boat and checked over, and it's fine. It's just your ego is on the floor. And I just was more concerned about getting back to my family and just going, I'm fine. Look, I know that might not have looked nice. And it actually didn't look too bad, but you just want to reassure them because that's their first exposure to freediving. So I did go on and do two more successful dives in that championship. But yeah, it was a humbler, that's for sure.
Yeah, so good at explaining what it's like to be under there, the feelings under there, and also the struggles under there and everything that comes with it. And for me, it's so, so fascinating. But how the fuck do you go from doing that to then working a normal job?
Yeah, I still don't know, to be honest with you. I haven't managed it very successfully because I came home from the World Championships and I was gunning to go. I went away immediately afterwards. Again, the last of my funds, knowing that I'm just screwing myself over for the few months afterwards, but I just didn't care. I knew, I kind of felt like I'd had a little bit of a breakthrough and I was like, yeah, now I can get better at this. Now I know, I just felt focused. So, you know, this is the end of 2019. I went away. I did another competition. I did much better in that competition. It was a little bit calmer. And I just felt I was on the cusp of something. And then so I was going to come home. I lined up loads of work. I got speaking gigs. And this was going to fund 2020. So in early 2020, I was going to train and compete in a competition in the cenotes in Mexico, which was going to be amazing. Then I was going to go train in Dahab for the summer. And then I was going to just take the competition circuit the following autumn. But obviously we know what happened in 2020. COVID happened. So none of that did. And I've gone back to diving since. I got COVID and I've had long COVID since. So it's affected my lungs considerably, which has kind of changed my relationship with freediving a little bit. I did get to go out in October 2020. There was like a little led up with the restrictions. I can't really remember. I just legged it. I literally remember the announcement came and opened up the laptop, searching, running down, booking it for a few days later. I'm like, that's it, I'm gone. And then I said, I went out there March 2022 when I was writing my book, and actually that was pretty special. That time was really special because I had long COVID, because my life looked really different at that point, because I felt physically different. My confidence was probably on the floor. And I think it took competitive freediving off the table. Again, I'm never going to be, you know, world record level, but there was more in the tank. I wanted to explore what I could do. And when that changes, it's humbling, but also it made me realize why I love the sport so much. And that was a real, like, you know, what you were talking about at the start, that mindfulness, that, you know, that acceptance of, look, you've had a shit year, Claire. You've been in and out of the hospital. So how can you expect to go and do PBs all over the shop? Just be glad you're here. And that was, yeah, it was a real special trip. And I remember just being so excited to be there. Like, you know, you're supposed to be calm or whatever. I was just giddy. I was just flipping, like, delighted with myself. And yeah, that was a real, really magical trip.
You were saying earlier on about like the brain fog you have and the fatigue you get from doing it. What's all that about?
Yeah, chite. Like, it's gotten better. Chronic fatigue was probably my main symptom. And that was like, I don't know. When I say I'm a busy person, it's not like I'm busy and important, but like my energy, I like to keep busy because, you know, I've been running from mental illness for a long time. And definitely a lot of the coping mechanisms involved quite a lot of activity, sometimes to my detriment. Don't get me wrong. Maybe to learn to do things in moderation would be a lot healthier for me. But I was a bit of an all or nothing sort of person. So freediving suited me down to the ground. And, you know, when that's taken away from you, you suddenly go, like, you know, there's definitely a point where I was wondering, like, will I ever be able to go freediving again? And then that felt so far away. And then it's like, will I ever be able to go out for a walk again without having to come home and lie down for 3 days? Will I ever be able to work with any sort of regularity? So things, you know, those kind of like milestones or those boundaries started getting really, really close to me. You know, my world became very small, to the point of kind of going like, if it goes this way, like, will I be in a wheelchair? Like, he was my boyfriend at the time. Well, like, I'm sitting on the floor of the shower and he's washing my hair. So where is that going to go? Like, and, you know, for some people that is their, you know, their reality, but things are changing quite quickly. And it really, my sense of identity took a battering, because I think we live in a society or world that like rewards busyness, or, you know, this whole push through. So what happens when you physically can't? Does it mean you're, you know, does it mean I'm lazy? I don't know how to progress doing this. So that was, such a disgusting, humbling, grounding experience. And it has taught me a lot more about, you know, where you find your self-worth. How to pace yourself. And like I said, it has gotten better. And I did promise myself, if I'm ever able to work out again, I'll never complain about it in the gym. My coach has listened to this and gone, yeah, well, she lied about that. So I'll still complain, but I do have there's always this, you know, if I'm in the gym and I do aerial silks as well in a terrific studio in Sandyford, Petit Valent, like to be able to do aerial silks, which I'm shied at, but it's a real challenge, and then go to the gym day later and then aerial silks, then maybe a hike at the weekend. I don't take that for granted, because that felt so far away, so far away. And I didn't know if that would ever be a reality again.
There's a lot of disciplines you can take away from sports and activities. Like, some will teach you how to build strength, endurance. Some even teach you about diet, unbeknownst to people. Do you know what's good for the body, bad for the body? But it sounds like to be a lot of mental benefits to doing this as well as the physical. So, like, there's a lot of stuff in this you can apply to your day-to-day, and I'm sure you do.
Oh, absolutely. Like, for me, it's taught me a lot about resilience. And again, I think I probably had the perception. So, like I said, I was mentally ill for quite a long time. And look, that had a hospital stay involved. It had doctors and prescriptions and diagnoses. But like, I suppose it's just enough to say it was shite. It manifested in me telling myself I wasn't good enough. I didn't deserve things, and self-sabotaging all the way along. And then you find this sport. And so because of all this, because of not being able to keep up with my friends or colleagues or peers, and then just fecking off to a country to travel, I did, I suppose, I'm probably a little bit ashamed to say it now, I guess I had a perception of myself as being weak, which is a really hard sentence to say out loud. I kind of thought that because I had this mental illness, I was weak. And then you find this sport and you can hold your breath for 5 minutes and 59 seconds and you learn what it is to be mentally strong. And it's not actually about the number, but it's about being okay with the discomfort and going, I'm really fucking uncomfortable right now, but I can find a way to be okay with that and get through. That is the definition of resilience. So it really helped me, I think, reframe my relationship with myself. I probably had spent thousands upon thousands of euro on counselling at that point, and yet I got it from free diving for free. So,
yeah. Free and free diving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Amazing. What's the name of your book?
The name of my book is Underwater, How Holding My Breath Taught Me to Live.
What was the whole process of writing the book? Was that an easy...
Crazy!
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was brilliant. Yeah. In retrospect, it was crazy. In retrospect, it was brilliant. Yeah, look, I really enjoyed it. I miss it. Like I said, I did go to Dahab to write it, and that just didn't happen. So it ended up being done in quite a short space of time that I won't say for fear that my editor might listen to this one day. But I did it, and you know, it was a really incredibly cathartic experience. And I do think there was this moment where I was writing, you know, and I'm writing a bit about mom and dad and my sisters, Kate and Sarah, my brother Matt, and then Boody, my husband. And you just kind of go like, I get to write how I feel about these people. I get to thank them. I get to pay tribute to them. I get to commit this to paper. How many people get, like, that is such a privilege. It was a really, really incredible experience. I'd be gunning to do it again.
Hint. And the name of your podcast again.
The name of my podcast is Scared Shitless. And like, it's funny, we're talking about all this and freediving. In a way, I feel like that's an older version of me because I'm not freediving at the moment. So it does feel funny again in terms of identity. But like everything I'm describing is something I'm exploring more now. So I'm getting a little bit older. I'm 42. And I'm finding like after long COVID and after other things that, you know, have happened in my life, I'm getting less brave. That impetus I would have had to go, sure, look, give it a go. Sure, look, we'll just see what happens. I'm losing that quite a lot. And I'm losing it because of fear. I'm losing it because I think someone's going to think I have notions, or someone's going to judge me, or someone's going to whatever. Those stupid voices. And I just realize how much it holds me back. And it's not a fear like glossophobia or one of those fancy phobia names, but actually those voices to me are fear, and they're absolutely sabotaging me. So it came from there's a chapter in the middle of the book called Fear, and just how it's just a sneaky little devil. It just shows up in your life, but it disguises itself as imposter syndrome or self-doubt or whatever way, but it always manages to sabotage you. So I wanted to kind of, firstly, by being a host, it made the vomit come right up the back of my throat. Hence the resentment for making it look so easy. It really did make everything in my body go, no. And now, instead of going, no, I won't do that, I take that information and go, all right, that's a really big response. You need to explore that. And that's the whole job of the motivation behind Scared Shitless, because I am scared shitless. But look, sure, look, I'll find a way to do it anyway.
Brilliant. I can't wait to listen to it, not only just because you mentioned the guest earlier on and their story, and I can't wait to listen to that, but just after even sitting here talking to you today, I'm very intrigued by it. I can't wait to listen to your podcast and read your book and everything. I think you're amazing.
But you make it look so easy. And it's not.
No, it doesn't always feel like that anyway. Sometimes it's tough as well.
So. And you're only doing it a wet day as well.
I am only doing it a wet day, to be fair, so yeah.
Don't listen to our early episodes then.
Now I'm like, absolutely going to listen to your early episodes.
Thanks very much. Claire, you probably have the most tranquil voice we've had on the podcast. Mm. So if you want to scrap the podcast and just come into
if there's anyone looking for audio speakers.
Yeah, like that.
If you need an Irish sounding caramel bunny. That snorts when she laughs.
Yeah. I wasn't thinking party line. I was thinking don't one of those like get you to sleep kind of things. They just leave on in the background.
Oh my God, I'm the new Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
Will he do his
Does he the
yeah, book? And he now reads audiobook.
The waves are coming across the shore. Just take a second.
And a casual seagull goes, Yeah, sound effects and all, sorted.
Look, who knows? No. Okay, thanks very much for coming in to us. We really appreciate it. And just before we wrap up, another shout out to our sponsor, FBT Gyms.
Talking Bollocks is proudly supported by FBT Gyms, the gyms that go above and beyond. Are you feeling like your current gym just isn't cutting it? It's time to level up with FBT Gyms, where you'll get away with more than the basics. With locations in Swords, Coolock, Drogheda and now Tallaght, FBT Gyms create a supportive environment to help you crush your fitness goals, no matter where you're starting from. Whether you're a total beginner or a seasoned pro, they've got the resources, motivation and expertise to keep you moving. And here's the best part. Membership is only €44 a month with no contract and full class access. Plus, you'll get a free induction to kick off your journey. Unleash your potential at FBT Gyms. Sign up today at fbtgyms.ie.
Take us out, Ed.
Boom.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in it now. Fill your body up. Work it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Cut down.